Hello everyone, Tom here. In true Batflips nerd style, this podcast was recorded literally minutes before Kevin Mather resigned. So all we chat about him having to resign, turns out he actually did when we finished recording. Thanks for listening. Hello and welcome to Batflips Nerds, a baseball podcast with a British twist. Tonight, I am your host, it's Tom Pringle. And joining me, I've got our financial correspondent, it's Darius Austin. How are you, Darius?
I feel grossly underqualified for that position, but I'm very good, thanks, Tom.
That's good. Joining us as well, and I wish he was here last week because we talked a little bit about the Rockies and I feel like he missed out on a right to reply. It's the Rockies' only fan in the UK now. It's Ben Carter. How are you, Ben?
I'm very well, Tom. Yeah, I intentionally missed last week's podcast for that exact reason. Want to talk about the Rockies.
It's been a rough time, man. It's been a rough time.
It has been hard.
You're sporting a Kansas City Royals hat at the moment. Is that on purpose or is it just the first one you found?
Well, here's one team that definitely won't break my heart. The good old Kansas City Royals. No, it's just the first one I found, actually. But I was committed to not wearing a Rockies hat. That's my level of anger. I will not wear your hat.
Is that it now? Are you just not? When does the lockdown on the hats end for the Rockies?
I suppose probably opening day. You know, I'll get all excited. Ryan will tap. We'll hit a leadoff single. We're back, baby.
Tell you what, the Arenado Cardinals jersey looks great.
Stop.
Oh God, Darius. That's painful. Right, we're coming together tonight just to do a bit of a recap. We're going to try and make it more regular for ourselves because we understand that we've been terrible for a regular podcast recently. So we decided to do a little baseball recap, and we're going to start with the big news that clearly the majority of the baseball world is talking about. And it's not a controversial one. We're going to start on a good note to begin with, which is Fernando Tatis Jr., the shortstop in the San Diego Padres, has signed a 14-year deal, and it's $340 million in total. And a real key point to it as well is the fact that it's got a no trade clause on it. So he is a Padre for life. He's 22 years old, which means he's going to be there until he's, 36 is when he's released from his contract in 2035. Clearly, I'm very, very excited. We've seen quite a bit of Fernando Tatis now, and clearly he's impressed a lot of people, including EA for throwing him on the front. In fact, is it EA? Who makes MLB The Show? I don't know. A company who threw it on the front of their cover
for Sony, I think.
The show. Yeah, something like that, probably. So they absolutely love him. They want him on there. He's been marketed as a big thing for baseball. He's been compared to LeBron James recently. In his press conference today to the San Diego press, he's been talking about the fact that he wants a street name. Well, he hasn't, but they've suggested that they name a street after him. There's going to be a third statue outside Petco to go alongside Hoffman and Tony Gwynn. All these things are already getting thrown out there. I mean, is it too early? Are we getting way too excited? And I'll throw that to Ben to begin with as a fellow youngster.
I think it's reasonable to get excited. I mean, this wraps up basically an immaculate off-season of work for the Padres, doesn't it? Bolster their big league roster and then lock down their, you know, MVP caliber shortstop to a long-term contract. And everything we've seen from him so far suggests that, you know, this is, if not a bargain, certainly very fair value for money. He's one of the best players in the game. As you said, highly marketable, talented on the field, seems like a great role model off the field, loves the city loves him. I mean, I suppose it's worth tempering expectations. This is still a player who has, I think it's less than a full season's worth of games under his belt. And this puts a lot of pressure on him as the guy who's, you know, not just an important player for the team, but now the face of the franchise for the next decade and a half. But I mean, everything we know about Tatis suggests that Harry is much upon that to me. So no, love it for him, love it for the Padres. I think it's a great day to be a Padres fan. Not such a great day to be a fan of the other four NOS team.
Yeah, and not a great day to be a White Sox fan either. I was oddly enough talking to Tom Borowski, who was who's an excellent artist, who does a lot of stuff, a lot of White Sox stuff, and he's done a beautiful painting of Michael Jordan. And he was saying, like, every time he sees Fernando Tatis Jr., whether it's, you know, a clip of him working out, a clip of him on the field, a press conference, it just breaks his heart every single time because they had him there. He was in their grasp. Darius, is 14 years too long, or is this absolutely perfect, as Ben said as well?
I think, yeah, this is great. I mean, Tatis knows how good he is. You can say that 14 years might be paying him a year or two too long. We obviously have no idea how he will age. But I think you've also got to acknowledge that he's probably not going to sign for less money than this, given how talented he is. The Padres are not going to put one over on him. And I think when you compare it to some of the other contracts we've been talking about, I don't think he's going to be Pujols or Cabrera and, you know, unable to run by the last year of that deal. I think there's a pretty good chance he's still an excellent Major League player by the end of this. And yeah, maybe he's not as good as exciting as he is now because he'll be 35 instead of 22. But I don't think this is going to completely blow up in the Padres' faces. You know, touch wood, hoping nothing terrible happens. But these are the kind of talents that you want to bet on. And if you can't get excited about this, then what are we really doing here, to be honest?
Yeah, you're right. We discussed it at length in our WhatsApp group, which I can tell that Ben just wants to switch off now. I think the majority of our WhatsApp group switched off, but myself, Darius and Russell went back and forth about this. And the deal is very backloaded, which we've talked about, and we'll have a few discussions about it now, but not too much detail as much as we did in the group. But essentially, it starts at $1 million, goes to 5, 7, 11, raising to 20, 25, and the deal ends at 36. And he's got, what's that? That is 6 years at $36 million running to the back end of the deal. So in a very short summary, Darius, why wouldn't the Padres have wanted to put that money early when he's at his prime rather than leave it to the end when he could, we don't know clearly, he could start to diminish, start to degrade. By then the DH might be in the NL, so we don't even need to worry about it. If he can't run, if he can still hit, it won't be an issue. But why wouldn't the Padres front load that money instead of leaving it at the back end of the deal?
Well, there's a lot of things going on here. One of which is that the Padres would have had Tatis under team control for ages anyway, because he's so young and, you know, relatively new to the majors. So they're kind of paying him, I think, you know, you make a few guesses about how he's going to develop and what arbitration is going to look like, but, you know, they're basically buying out a bunch of years and, you know, maybe they save a few million here or there. You know, if he actually is MVP caliber over those few seasons, we've seen guys go well past 20 million in the final year of arbitration. I think Lindor just went past 20 this offseason. You can make the argument that Tatis is probably going to exceed that. So that's kind of one aspect of it. I think it's kind of scaled to where he would have been in terms of arbitration raises. But also there's an inflation aspect to it, that 36 million at the back end doesn't mean 36 million in 2021 is going to be worth less just based on inflation. So that's an aspect. And the Padres want to surround this guy with a lot of talent. And we can say it's ridiculous that major league teams are imposing these budgets on themselves, but the reality is, maybe they don't sign, you know, an extra reliever or two to bolster the bullpen, or, you know, pick up a rotation arm or something if they're suddenly paying Tatis $36 million in his age 28 season. This just gives them a little bit of extra flexibility, I think. And I don't think AJ Preller is thinking, what am I going to do about this 14 years down the line? He's thinking, I'm going to go out and try and win two or three World Series with this guy and I'll worry about it later.
Yeah, and that's a really key point now. Is how, like you said, at 22, 23, 24, he's got 1 million. His salary is 1 million, 5 million, 7 million. That's pretty much pittance for the talent that you're getting. But I imagine that deal has been structured with the idea that they're saying to him, look, have less now, have more chance of winning so we can surround you with better guys. And in later life, you'll get your rewards, you'll get your payback. Ben, as the most one of the most competitive men I've ever met when it comes to sports, what reason is there for Tatis to even try now? Because he's, you know, he's going to be only 36 million when he's 35 years old. Does he need to even push himself anymore?
Is that me or Tatis is the most competitive man you know in sports? Anyway, I would say we've seen situations like this before where players get given enormous contracts and the questions are asked about what's the what's the inspiration or what's the reason why they would push as hard as they previously had now they've been paid, which I think is quite insulting to athletes to suggest that the minute they get their paycheck, they're going to sort of hang the spikes up and take it easy. But for Tatis, you can tell that there's a hunger there, not just to win a World Series in San Diego, but to end his career as the greatest Padre of all time and a legend among, you know, those who the game in that city and beyond. This guy who in 15 years time will turn around and say was, you know, potentially a Hall of Fame caliber talent who, you know, brought the World Series to San Diego, and they've made a very clear investment as him, as the guy they see as being at the very center of this what looks to be particularly exciting 5-10 year stretch for the city. And I suspect that's going to, if anything, drive him hard to play better than he ever has. You know, for him, it's not really a question of talent, it's a question of staying healthy, of continuing to play the way he has been previously and living up to that contract. I'm not concerned about it. And look, in 15 years time, we might turn around and say 36 million for Tatis, he's aging, not what he used to be, but he'll probably bring them, you know, to the World Series, possibly beyond, in that time. And I think most Padres fans will look back and think it's well worth it for the fact that he wore our colours for the majority of his career.
Yeah, you're right. And that's the risk the Padres taking, isn't it? They signed a big extension with Will Myers. It didn't look great to begin with. It started to come good now. And the Hosmer contract, which I also mentioned in our group, is very front-loaded. And now the money's going to start going down. But as Russell pointed out, it's a very different deal. That was a free agency signing rather than an extension. All the stars are aligning, and it really feels like, you know, they've got to do it now. And if the Padres don't do it now, there's going to be a lot of disappointment this year. And I think that there's going to be a window of sort of 2 to 3 years. I can't remember the names of the people, but there's kind of, in 2 years' time, there's some big names leaving the Padres. And in 3 years' time, there's going to be another couple of names going. So this is kind of their window with the talent they've got immediately. As we've already seen with the Padres, they're definitely going to start taking some of those prospects out, getting some better guys back in, and just keep developing the squad. So all in all, really good news. Excellent news for Tatis. We also found out today that he also loves to milk cows. So this is awesome news for me, my obsession with baseball players, milking cows. So maybe I'll write to Tatis and he will answer my article.
I can't believe you didn't lead with the cow story.
I was very tempted and I thought it was quite predictable, but...
There we go. Play to you. Real baseball reporter now, Tom. Not just.
I know. I'm trying my best, Ben. I don't want to come across as someone who's just amusing, and that's it. Let's move on to the miserable baseball story of this week, which is the Seattle Mariners. Kevin Mather, who's the president and the CEO of the Seattle Mariners, has got himself into a little bit of trouble. Ben, you will not get that reference at all. Darius, I asked you if you could have a look at it because I have literally read a few tweets about it and that's it. Could you give us a quick rundown of what happened and why the Mariners immediately have to fire Kevin?
Well, sadly, it doesn't seem like they're going to, but I'll give the recap. So Kevin Mather, yeah, president and CEO of the Mariners, was doing a Zoom call with a local Rotary Club, the Bellevue Breakfast Rotary Club. Believe it or not, they actually put this out on YouTube, which is how somebody found out about it and got all these comments. So he's just basically having a chat with a bunch of fans about the direction of the Mariners and how we see the 21 season going, things like that. And I'm not sure if there are any bridges he didn't burn during this conversation. Some of the highlights, he basically was xenophobic, racist, just really insulting of Hisashi Iwakuma and Julio Rodriguez, saying they didn't speak very good English. He sort of implied that Iwakuma was lying about not being able to speak good English, and once they decided to pay his translator, then he suddenly was able to speak better English, as though that this was all some kind of grift on Iwakuma's part. He tacitly admitted to service time manipulation with prospects like Jared Kelnick and Logan Gilbert. He kind of just said a lot of weird things about even like some of their most long-tenured players, basically just said like Kyle Seager's out of here after this year, you know, been a great servant, but off you go, Kyle. It was altogether a train wreck. He forgot the name of Luis Torrens. He called him Luis Torres throughout this call. While speaking very highly of him, clearly didn't know what his name was. Altogether, I think just really dismissive, insulting, very like anti-union. I think overall, I would say he basically came across as somebody who just treated everybody in the Mariners organization as somebody who was there to serve his personal interests as opposed to real people.
Ben, is there any way the Mariners can save this situation if they decide to stick with Kevin?
I don't think so. I mean, this is... We've been over how there's been a sort of train wreck of failure at organizational level for a number of MLB franchises this offseason. And this is kind of the latest, and it's a depressing trend. It really is. And the fact that the Mariners seemingly are going to stand by him is kind of an indictment of the whole system, of how rotten these sort of front offices and ownership groups are to their core. You know, as Darius said, it wasn't an offhanded comment. It wasn't a joke taken the wrong way. It was a bizarre, continuous sort of pattern of insulting his own players, of insulting people he works with, of being xenophobic. I mean, you know, if you're an international player looking at those comments, and the Mariners, to be fair, have quite a lot of those and some very, very talented ones, including Julio Rodriguez, you know, how can you read that and you know, want to work for that organization? It's just, it's baffling that anyone could think that. But you know, the fact that he said it shows that he does, and he's not going to be the only one who does. You know, I think someone on Twitter said that, you know, in this interview, he said the quiet part out loud. This is all stuff that we probably thought these guys are thinking, but he's literally gone out and said it in an interview, brazenly, clearly, you know, no respect for the consequences of it. It's remarkable. And I hope the Mariners see sense and get rid of him. But I think it speaks to an issue deeper than just, you know, one sort of rogue rotten apple. This is a problem throughout baseball and the way that it's run from, you know, from the very top all the way through to the bottom. And if I were a player, and certainly if I were a member of MLBPA, I'd be furious. You know, I would really be particularly unhappy with this and the way it's been handled so far.
Well, speaking of the MLBPA, Trevor Bluth has come out in Twitter, and I'll read tweets verbatim. I'll drop the swear words there because we'll try and keep the explicit tag off this pod. When people ask why the MLBPA is so guarded and hesitant to engage in true bipartisanship with the league, show them the Kevin Mather transcription. These dudes aren't even trying to hide it anymore. I've dedicated my life to this game. It's growing its fan base with John Boy. I'm growing its fan base with John Boy. I coach a little league team. I try to mentor young guys in the league. And then we've got guys like this trying to take the soul out of it. It's so disrespectful. Like, I legit feel disrespected. And if I feel disrespected, think about the guys with the Mariners right now. F off, dude. Why don't you go learn Spanish and Japanese? Go live in a new country and learn their language. See how easy it is. What an arrogant mindset. And I think you guys have just summarized all of that. He summarized that exactly what you guys have just said as well. The fact that he's so arrogant with his mindset on this whole thing. The translator part as well, for me, and it shouldn't be treated like this, but the translator part for me is quite important, because you think how lonely you can be coming across to a new country, and this translator ends up being your friend at the same time. Whether you like it or not, you're going to have to get on with this person. You'll probably become their friend. And then the club are all of a sudden saying, yeah, we're not going to pay him because you're not trying hard enough to learn English. I mean, it's just terrible. Like, you're giving little respect to your guys. As for the service time, I really, really struggle with this, because it's absolutely awful that teams do it and they can get away with it. But then on the flip side, is it the team's fault or the front office's fault? The league allows them to do this. Now, I understand clearly it's within the CBA. But can we ride the teams that hard for doing something that's within the rules, even though it's clear manipulation what they're doing? You know, he's working on his defense, wherever it may be. Darius, am I right to be struggling with this? Because if I was a front office member, I probably would end up with that kind of so focused mindset of, we need to look after this guy. We're not ready to use him right now because we're going to lose next year. Am I wrong for thinking that?
If you approach it from a, you know, purely mercenary financial perspective, then obviously it is the sensible thing to do. Baseball's system is broken. This needs to be fixed, and it's not going to get fixed, at least until the next CBA. And let's be honest, who knows how that's going to go? It could be an almighty mess, especially with this. But yeah, you can see why they do it. It makes logical sense. Now, you see teams like the Nationals, for example, who I think are a team that has not been afraid to promote their prospects aggressively when they see an opportunity to win baseball games, which is what, you know, we should actually be doing. But for the most part, I think we get this attitude. And clearly Kevin Mather is a guy who thinks about these things in these very financial you know, extremely mercenary terms, and he doesn't really care about anything else from what I'm getting from this. So yeah, I don't think you can necessarily blame teams. The loophole is there, and none of them are ever actually going to say, yeah, we're manipulating service time, so technically they're not going to get caught up on it. But you know, from a every other perspective, it's just super icky.
Yeah, and I can't remember who put the tweet out there as well, but they mentioned saying, you know, if you think this is just the Mariners and not your organization, you're wrong. There's people like this in everyone's organization. So it's not, you know, oh, this is terrible for the Mariners and the Mets are a dreadful organization in the way they're working at the moment. You know, there's people like this throughout all of baseball. I'm not suggesting it's saying it's, you know, flooded with them, but there's clearly people like that out there. A team that didn't manipulate the service time were the Padres, going back to them, and with Tatis as well, because in 2019 there was consideration to leave Tatis down in AAA to try and work that service time. But they AJ Preller said that he had Eric Hosmer, Will Myers, and Manny Machado all come into his office and say, if you don't promote this guy now, you're an absolute fool. You need to get him into the majors. So there is scope to do that, but I suppose it depends on the bravery of the front office. Ben, what are your views on the service time? Darius has mentioned the fact that, you know, baseball is broken, it needs to be fixed, but is there anything to say, you know, teams are just doing what they're allowed to do, like we can't hammer them too much?
Yeah, look, the Mariners aren't the only team to do this, like you said, and I think it just shows how front offices now are treating baseball like a business, not like a sport. You know, this isn't the business of winning games. This is the business of making money, you know. And it's remarkable how, and it's not the Mariners at all, but, you know, the Cubs did it with Chris Bryant, holding him down in the minors. I think they also got into a tiff about, you know, paying him minimum salary the year after he, you know, won the NL MVP award. Like, all this stuff happens with every team where they push, you know, the limit of the laws to the absolute edge, you know, to get the most money they possibly can, save themselves a nickel here, a dime there. And I think it's just sad. I think it shows this priority for saving money, for dollars over wins, over their fans even, which is a real shame. But I suppose, look, we should know better than to expect different at this point. Baseball teams have shown themselves to be fickle and to be like that, and to care more about the bottom line than the results. So as sad as it is, I suppose we're the fools for being surprised by it time and time again.
So counterpoint to that, then, to them not thinking about the fans, is the fact that the front office might argue, well, we're not going to compete this year, so why would we bring this guy up? We can get an extra year out of him, and let's say in 4 years' time, when we've still got control, instead of losing him, or 5 years, whichever it is, we've still got this guy and we've got a chance of going for the World Series.
Well, look, I think with all these players, if you want them on your team, you can have them on your team. You know, these players, they're never, well, very, very rarely going to refuse to sign a contract point blank. I think all of these players have their prices, and teams like the Indians, like apparently the Rockies, like the Rays, you know, have this sort of organizational mindset of, we're not going to hand out long contracts. We're going to take guys to their arbitration years. We're going to trade them away for value. We're going to get young again. And if that's what you want to do, good for you. But I don't like when these franchises cry poverty and cry out for an extra year of service time manipulation, cry out for an extra year of base rate salary. It just leaves a foul taste in my mouth when you consider the revenues of these teams, when you consider that these players have been oftentimes toiling away in the minors for years, earning sweet FA, and now they've got the chance to get to the majors, make a name for themselves. They're being told to spend 2 weeks working on their backhand drills. I think the whole thing is just a bit wrong.
Yeah. Completely understand and couldn't agree more. I mean, it annoys me that teams do it. I understand why they do it, but I don't like it at all. Let's do something fun. Let's talk about MVPs. So MVPs and Cy Young odds were released recently. Today, in fact, they have all been released for both leagues now. So what I'd like to do is say that we have got $100 each, or £100, whatever way you want to win, and we get to put our money where we like. So I'd like to have a little bit of a think while I'm talking about the American League Cy Young, the American League MVP, the National League Cy Young, and the National League MVP. Darius, I reckon you're probably more ready and prepared to go into this than any of us three. So I'd like you to start and tell me where you're going to put your £100. You can put £100 on one player straight away and that's it, and forget it all, or you can split it between the four different awards. You tell me what you'd like to do.
I'm just trying to get the good, I think I've got it, the summary up here. Yeah, I mean, you made a valid point earlier in that it does feel like slightly ridiculous to bet against Mike Trout in any situation. I don't want to say you're hoping, but in that situation, you are kind of like, well, Trout probably needs to get hurt, because if he's actually healthy and at his best, then he will be MVP. My Trout is 2-1 in the MVP. So I don't know that it's like a great use of money anyway.
But then look at the next odds. Alex Bregman's 10-1. Like, the gap is huge.
Yeah, I think I'm looking at a different one to you then.
Oh, I've got bet365, but it'll be there or thereabouts, won't it?
Yeah, he's 12-1. I'll get the bet365 up, so we're playing from the same.
Okay. So, yeah, so... one of the key points, it might have been Braves Bob who popped it up in our UK fantasy chat, and I thought it was a great point about, you know, look at the list of the American League MVPs, then look at the list of the National League MVPs, and it just shocks you at how different the quality of hitters are in the two leagues at the moment.
Yeah, it's quite staggering, really, isn't it? I mean, there are guys that you can see ascending to there, but I think when you've got somebody like Trout at the top.
So, I'll tell you what, let's do this. So, American League, let's go for the top five in the American League. It goes Mike Trout, Alex Bregman, Aaron Judge, Jose Ramirez, Matt Chapman. Seems like a decent bunch. Now, let's look at the National League. Mookie Betts, Juan Soto, Cody Bellinger, Fernando Tatis Jr., Ronald Acuna. There's a definite difference in the quality in those names.
Yeah, it's a bit absurd, isn't it? I mean, the Betts was obviously a league switcher, but I think, you know, you can see, yeah, Judge has had his health issues, but it's gargantuan. And I love Matt Chapman, but he's not going to be able to compete with those guys on the National League side. And I've said on this pod a few weeks ago that I think Juan Soto might well end up being the best hitter in baseball again this year.
Oh, there you go. Okay, Darius, so where are you going to put your money then? So you've got your $100. You're going to stick it on one player or split it? What are you going to do?
I think I might split it.
Okay.
I mean, I do quite like the George Springer price.
Where are we?
33-1.
Ooh.
I can see him coming in. Jay's, you know, causing a bit of a stir in the AL East.
Yeah.
People get like the narrative. So yeah, maybe
Mike Trout's out for the season. Yeah, that's what you're saying.
Mike's out, yeah. So yeah, maybe I'll stick, I don't know, £30 on George Springer.
George Springer, nice. I should write these down, really, shouldn't I? Let me get a bit of paper. I could use this laptop.
Kyle Seager's on here. Kevin Mather thinks about that.
Future ex-Mariner.
Future ex-Mariner, Kyle Seager. Kyle Lewis is 50-1 as well.
So you're going 30 on Springer at 33-1.
I do want to bet on Stanton, but I'm just not sure that I want to like place that kind of curse on him.
Oh, wow. You're sticking with the American League, are you, for your bets?
Probably not. Are we just doing MVPs at the moment, or can I go to...
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah. So, Ben, do you want to pick an MVP now, or do you want to stick your $100 all on one person?
So, I had a little look earlier at the odds. I made a couple of little... outside bets myself. It was on Sky Bet, but it looks like the odds were the same. So my American League MVP choice was Yordan Alvarez, so one of Springer's former teammates. Nice. Who's at 40-1 at the moment. Oh, wow. Who obviously missed all of last season, or at least most of last season. I think he had an injury issue, but
two games maybe.
Oh, there you go. So apparently he's back healthy now, but I think he's a legitimate, well, like triple crown threat potentially if he stays fully healthy and mashes, and I think he is going to mash. Mm-hmm. So I like his odds at 40-1. Now on the NL side, again, I don't see him winning. In fact, I don't see him having a chance, but I did like the odds at Trey Turner at 50-1. I think if Turner is going to win MVP, it will probably go to Juan Soto, because the Nationals will probably have done well and Soto is probably going to have done better than Turner. But there's a guy who's got 30-30 potential, might win a batting title, 50-1. I liked a few quid on him there. Mm-hmm. So I'd probably split my MVP money between those two. And now I need to have a look at the Cy Young odds, because I don't know what those are.
Okay, so I'm going to put my... I've just lost my list. There we go. Right, so I'm going to put my... I'm going to split it four ways. I'm going to put a bet on each category. So I'm going to put £25 on my friend and yours, Ben. I'm going to put it on Nolan Arenado at 12-1 in the National League. I think he's going to absolutely storm it in the NL Central, because, as we discussed last podcast, the NL Central is terrible this year. Darius, are you ready for your next pick?
Yeah, I like the Christian Yelich price, actually. I think he was a bit injury hit last year. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to stick another, give me 40 quid on Christian Yelich at 12 to 1, National League MVP.
Yeah. 12 to 1. Sorry, Ben, give me yours again. So it's out. Did you go for Alvarez, or are you talking about your normal bets?
Yeah, so I'll go 25 on Alvarez and 25 on Trey Turner.
Turner. Okay, got that. What are the odds on those? Sorry. This is great podding.
40 to 1 on Alvarez, 50 to 1 on Turner.
Bloody hell.
And for anyone listening, you have to give me 10% commission if they end up winning.
And I went for Nolan. Okay, then. So, Ben, can you go for your next one for us, please?
My pick for NL Cy Young, again, I'm going to go a bit out of left field for this one, because who wants to be winning small bucks is Corbin Burnes of the Milwaukee Brewers, who was good last season, had a bit of a breakout year. I think he's got the peripherals to back up that breakout, and I think this could be the season that he turns into a legitimate Cy Young contender. So I like him.
So that's 25 on that, yeah?
Yeah.
Right, so my American League MVP, I'm going to go for the man who didn't really do a lot last year, I don't believe, or he might have, again, had one of his sneaky years and everyone completely forgot about it. And that's Anthony Rendon at 16 to 1. I'm going to take 25 pounds on him. He had a brilliant year again, didn't he?
He had an Anthony Rendon year. He was extremely good, but like not flashy. And so
no one saw it at all. Okay, then. Hopefully you can't hear the kettle that's now kicking off in the background. Darius, could you give me your... Well, you're going for a Cy Young one now, I'm guessing.
Yeah, let me go for Cy Young. I'm just going for this because it's fun. I've got like 30 quid left, haven't I? Let me put 15 on Shohei Ohtani for American League Cy Young.
Nice. Like that.
I'm sure he will get hurt and it won't work, but he's got the talent, so I'm
going to... I think that's perfect. I like that one. I was going to actually go for that on the AL MVP just for a bit of a laugh. So you've gone for... Sorry, it's 15, was it, on Shohei Ohtani?
Yeah.
Okay, Ben, let's hear your next bet.
I'm looking through the AL Cy Young field and it is bad. There are some really bad names after the top three or four. So
Randy Dobnak is on here. I don't know why, but... Oh, how they
Dobnak's on there?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
I guess Justin Dunn, yeah. Do they have to just pick somebody?
I don't know who Christian Javier plays for.
Astros.
Brilliant.
But I suppose if I've got to pick someone, I mean, I would put my money on Garrett Cole, to be honest, but that's boring because he's the favourite. So I guess if I've got to be cool and hipster, I'll go for Jesus Luzardo. Jesus Luzardo at 25 to 1. Who I really enjoyed watching pitch last year. Very good pitcher, lefty. Probably not going to win Cy Young. Probably not going to throw enough innings to win Cy Young. But
so you haven't £25 on that, are you?
I am, yeah.
I think you've run out of money. Hold on. What's my maths here?
25 on each.
25 on Turner. Are you counting the Alvarez one or not?
Yeah, it should be 25 on each, right?
Oh, sorry, yeah, you've got four. Why have I ended... Oh, anyway, I've ended it with three somehow. Or two. Right, so my American League Cy Young pick, I am going to go for... right, I am going to go for... £49 on Zach Greinke. I am going all in on Greinke.
I mean,
he's at 28 to 1. I think he's going to have one of his amazing years and just blow everyone out of the water. Darius, your NL Cy Young pick.
NL Cy Young. I've got 15 left. There's a lot of pitchers I like here. It's better than the AL field for sure. You know, I want to put it on Clayton Kershaw at 20 to 1. I think he's still got it.
I like that. All right, Kershaw at 20 to 1.
But this is a much better field. No Randy Dobnak's here. To be clear, I think Randy Dobnak's kind of cool, but I don't know why he's on it.
I'm surprised to see Chris Paddock at 60 to 1. That's a terrible bet. Who is taking that bet? I mean,
John Gray's on here, Ben. I assume they have to put on somebody from every team. So
yeah, like the All-Star game.
Marquez is on there, 33.
Yeah, do they put, have they put two from every team on here? Is that why?
Maybe.
Weird people.
Yeah, because you've got Chris Paddock and Blake Snell.
But I don't know. Is Berrios is not here, is he?
Berrios is, yeah.
Is he?
Where is he?
16.
Oh, he's right up, okay. I was just wondering, like, did they have to pick two twins and they, like, couldn't think of a second twin, so they picked Randy Dobnak? But...
Well, it'd be like me trying to name the twins, wouldn't it? So I've just looked. I was trying to find Denilson Lamet. I was like, how is Chris Paddock on here? But Denilson Lamet is not, but Denilson Lamet is there.
It's much higher here.
I'm going to put my final pound on Jacob deGrom. Just play safe. That's £2 back.
It's printing money, really.
It's 5-1 actually, so that's £6 back. Come on.
End up playing, isn't it?
Right, so we will visit those in halfway through the season, and we'll decide whether we're going to cash out or not on those. I will probably end up cashing out on Greinke because I'll have no money left. Right, let's move on to the next big news, which is Brett Gardner is back. Old Ham and Eggs has returned, the podcast fan favourite. He's got a one-year deal with $4 million coming in. Darius, could you give me an over-under on his playing time for the year? How many games do you think he's going to play? Or start, should I say?
How many games is he going to start? I think he's going to start 76 games.
76? That many?
Yeah, because, like, you know, everyone's going to get hurt. Let's be clear. The Yankees have got some tremendous talent, but Aaron Hicks, Giancarlo Stanton, and Aaron Judge have all had really significant injury issues over the last few years. If they hadn't, I don't. They would have brought Gardner back. Really, I know they've got Clint Frazier still, and I think he'll be fine. But there's two other outfield spots to fill, and I think they'll find ways to get old Brett back in the lineup.
So. 76 games.
Have you seen how many games Stanton has played over the last two seasons?
No, that's fair. I mean, are we saying that the Yankees are now the Mets when it comes to their medical staff? Because it seems that everyone keeps breaking at the Yankees at the minute. Ben, what's your prediction then?
How many games Gardner plays?
Yeah.
I'm Darius. So I think he'll play more than you think. And again, it's sad to say, but it's just because of the fact that he is playing on a team that suffered so many injuries. If you look at his playing time in previous years, I mean, he's basically been a starter every single season. I think he'll be penciled in as a bench bat to start the year, but they'll try and get him in the lineup against right-handers as much as they can. And it doesn't take a mystic to guess that someone's going to get injured at some point and he'll get stuck into the lineup. But no, I like bringing him out. He seems like the kind of free agent who was like, well, I've already got the Yankees jerseys. I may as well go back. It's going to be a pain to have to get rid of those and get a whole new load in.
I've got all these razors now. I'm going to have to use them to keep shaving this beard off.
Exactly. He's got the bald head ready to go, so it's just right. Makes sense. Good fit.
Plays all the time as well, Gardner. Like, he's always played, like, a lot of games.
I'm saying it now. He'll play 50 games, and every game he plays over that, I will give 50p to a charity of your two's choice.
So are we saying just games now or starts?
Start, sorry. Yeah, so he's got to start. So I'm saying 50 starts. Every start over that, I will give 50. It's like a sponsored run. Every mile you run, I'll give you 50p. every game he starts, over 50, I will give 50p to charity of your choice. And you two need to pick it collectively.
Let's do this, Brett Gardner.
Every game he starts.
I think we should try and get in touch with Brett and make him pick the charity.
Let's do it. Let's not tell him first, though, because he'll probably talk to Cashman and they'll just sort it out and he'll play every single game.
Clint Frazier be sat on the bench every game.
He'll be on the lineup and then immediately taken out the game every single game. He'll walk out on the field.
Oh, I think you're forgetting that Brett Gardner is actually really good. And it's surprising me looking at his page now. But he's been worth 37.5 WAR in his career. Like, he's just been a solid regular for his entire career.
Yeah, Brett Gardner is absolutely a Hall of very good player. He's had a terrific career.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I still don't think he's playing more than 50 games. I'm saying it now. I'm saying the Yankees are going to sort it out and they're going
to
look
after their
nervous
to me.
Where shall I make the checkout to? Which donkey sanctuary do you want me to give it to?
Charity is called the Colorado Rockies.
The Get Nolan Back charity. let's have some listener questions. We were fed an absolute glut of questions today. So let me pick out just the best two so you can guess how many we've had. Let's have a look if I can even find it. That's how bad it is. So Braves Bob, he said, can we spare a thought for Jerry Kelenic, who's gone from the frying pan into the fire by being traded from the Mets to the Mariners? Darius, what's one tip you've got for Jerry Kelenic right now?
Is this worse? Like, we do the Mets bit, don't we? But is it just the media coverage? We had Jeff and Jarrett on the pod a few weeks back to talk about the prospects, and I asked Jeff, like, you know, the Mariners have got a bunch of great prospects. Are they going to be in the playoffs? And he basically said, no, because I don't trust the front office to do the right thing. Today's events don't really cast that in a particularly good light. But, I mean, dude seems supremely confident. It looks like a terrific player. I don't know if he needs much help. I think if there's one piece of advice I could give Jerry Kelenic, I don't know. Keep doing what you're doing, I guess, and hope that at some point somebody turns up in the front office to surround you with the talent you need to get in the playoffs.
Ben, have you got any advice for him?
Not really. If I were Jerry Kelenic, I wouldn't be listening to me, that's for sure. I do like the insinuation here from Bob that Kelenic is cursed and that wherever he ends up, that franchise is doomed.
That's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
But no, if you're Kelenic, you've got to be pretty upset. Did you see Julio Rodriguez's tweet yesterday? He kind of photoshopped him into the Michael Jordan meme, saying, and I took that personally, which I thought was very funny for a guy who apparently can't speak English very well.
I didn't mention that, but clearly Kevin Mather has no idea what he's talking about, because Rodriguez has been like working really hard in his English for ages, and everybody else you ask is like, yeah, his English is really good. He's been working on it for a long time.
Embarrassing. So I'm sure the Mariners prospects group chat, if such a thing exists, was popping off last night.
I think the folks down at Lookout Landing have had a day, shall we say.
Yeah.
It's really been a rough day for them. Okay, next question comes from Andy, who asks, we'll point this to you, Ben, clearly. Should the Rockies go all in on the fire sale and rebuild? As a fan, is short-term pain really worth it for an unguaranteed long-term gain? Or would fans rather see a team be competitive, ultimately, even if ultimately falls slightly short of the playoffs?
I mean, I feel like we could do a whole hour talking about the Colorado Rockies, couldn't we?
Go on, then, let's
not that
it.
Anyone.
Here we go.
Not that anyone would want that. But I think for most Rockies fans at this point, we just want to see a plan. I could not care less what the plan was. If the plan was to only use left-hand pitchers, if the plan was to only use players shorter than 5'8", if there was just something that the Rockies front office looked like they were building towards, I feel like that would give fans something to get excited about. Whereas this bizarre, you know, half-baked, let's give away our best player plus a bunch of money, but claim we're not rebuilding, but be projected to be the worst team in baseball, but, you know, not bother bringing any free agents, but no, we're definitely not rebuilding. I mean, who are we trying to kid here? If they came out and just said, look, you know, we're rebuilding, next few years will be tough. I think Rockies fans understand, because if there's one thing Rockies fans have enjoyed, it's been success throughout the history of the franchise. I can't even complete that sentence. But it's just one of those situations where the team is in a complete mess, and I don't see it ending until at the very least the general manager's gone, and fingers crossed the owner too, because there's just no semblance of an idea of how to make this team competitive and how to stop this endless cycle of winning 80 games and thinking you've got a chance and then sort of tearing it down again. And it's mind-numbing, especially when you look at the fact that the Dodgers and Padres have built these incredible super teams. The Giants are normally well team now. Even the D-backs, I mean, there's not much going on for the D-backs, but there's more going on for them than the Rockies. So yeah, it's a bit exhausting, as I say, and I don't blame Rockies fans who've just kind of given up on the team. And I feel like I kind of have for this season. It's just not much to look forward to.
So was your answer that they should go all in on a fire sale and rebuild, or are you content that there's just no plan and just keep rolling with no plan?
I think they should rebuild, absolutely, at this point. You don't give away your best player if you don't want to rebuild, you know what I mean? If they're claiming to be going for it, then their actions make absolutely no sense. So yeah, go for rebuild, deal Story, deal Blackman if you can, you know, but if you, that absolutely is what they should be doing, but I have absolutely no faith in their front office to do that.
Yeah, makes total sense. Darius, from the third team in that division, probably looking up, is now a time for the Giants to try and start building and be competitive, or is it just hold off and let the Padres and Dodgers beat each other up for a couple of years?
No, I think we're going to see the Giants in the next couple of years start to make some bigger moves. There's a lot of money coming off the books soon. So I think you'll certainly see, if not 2022, then definitely 2023, the Giants are going to have a lot of these guys on the field. Elliot Ramos is going to be on the field. Yeah, maybe we haven't seen Marco Luciano yet, but that might be the year he comes up. I think you're going to see them make a lot of moves towards contending that year, certainly. So yeah, it's exciting time to be a Giants fan, and I think I sort of want to say that the Rockies should go for a rebuild, but it's not really like, who would you trust? I think you need to fire the front office and then go for a rebuild. I wouldn't want to go, oh, let's let these guys who keep screwing it up have another go for the next 5 years, because you can't be like, let's go for a rebuild and then fire them halfway through it because they're bad, because that's the whole point. Like, so I think just wipe the slate clean. They've got a problem. Cause is a weird situation, and I don't think they've worked out to solve it. I don't know if they ever will work out to solve it, but I think they need to do something else than what's happening now. And yeah, I don't think whatever this is qualifies. Madness is repeating the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, right? That's what's happening here.
It seems like it.
I mean, the point of the question, sorry not to interrupt, was just, I think for Rockies fans, almost a reason to watch the team and to be happy this season was Nolan and was Trevor Story and was the fact that two of the best players in the game wear your colours. And even if we only win 65 games, you still have those two guys on your team as a reason to watch every night. And I think a lot of fans would have been happy, maybe not happy, would have put up with the team not being great to be able to, in 10 years' time, turn around and say we had Nolan Arenado, a Hall of Fame third baseman, on our team the whole time. And we enjoyed a minute of him playing. He was everything, you know, to fans, and we were everything to him. And, you know, to take that away whilst showing no indication of what the actual plan is, it's just an insult to the fans, you know, for all the people who saw him as the future of the franchise, who saw that massive contract handed out, you know, to basically say he's fallen out with our GM, so we're going to give him away for free and just try something different, but we don't know what. I mean, I don't know. It's just, yeah, it's demoralizing.
I mean, I don't think there should be an element of ownership getting involved in moves and blocking moves or pushing moves through. But it does strike me that there is clear animosity between Nolan and the GM. And how that deal was allowed to happen, I have no idea. It's a dreadful deal. Nobody's looked at it and said, oh, this is good, I like this. It just feels like that it was literally a disagreement. They didn't like each other. And like you said, that huge contract was handed out and it's just been an absolute waste. I don't understand it.
Yeah, since then. And the crazy thing is that I feel like ownership tried to paint Arenado as the villain here, and they were just never going to get away with that because you know, he'd always said he wanted to be a Rocky for life. He'd signed on track, asked was build a competitive team around him. And since they signed him to that deal, they've spent like $36 on free agents, and probably a bad $36 at that. And yeah, that was the problem, was they telegraphed the fact they wanted to get rid of him for so long, they were never going to get themselves a good deal. The opt-out, which Bridich added into the contract himself, hamstrung them when they wanted to get rid of him because he might opt out after this season anyway. So, you know, the whole thing is just from top to bottom, a perfect case study in organisational failure. But the Rockies are the only people that can't see that.
Shocking. Absolutely shocking.
You comp the Rockies pretty to the Marlins as well. Like, you know, they started the same year. Neither of them have ever won the division. Neither of them have ever won more than 92 games. The difference is the Marlins have somehow won the World Series twice whilst going through this absolute fire sale for like most of the rest of their existence. But, you know, they are doing something now. They've hired an exciting new GM. They've got a good farm system. They actually look like they are attempting to build something different from what's gone before. And, you know, maybe I'm a sucker for thinking that the new Marlins ownership group will be different from Marlins ownership group, but they at least appear to be trying. If you ask, I'm sure Pete Pratt's listening, if you ask Marlins fans, they're excited. You know, they've got some fun players. It's going well. You know, they got a bit lucky last season, I think, but it was a good ride. And yeah, I think we had that with the Rockies a bit. You know, they had a couple of ludicrous performances from like Kyle Freeland and that, you know, just about got them into contention. And it's been all downhill since then, and really, really rapidly downhill. And I don't know how they burned the bridges so quickly with Arenado. I don't know why they made that contract the way they did. And I don't know why they've given him up, other than the fact that they clearly just wanted the cash. That seems to be the only motivation, because it wasn't for the players they got. So yeah, it's all been managed very badly. And I can't say that I'm surprised by most of that. The only thing I'm surprised is that the front office is still in place and that they haven't just decided to start over.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting time for the Rockies. I think that division, as you said, Darius, is going to get pretty competitive and interesting once the Giants start making their moves. But yeah, sorry, Ben. Sorry to end it all on a really sad note. Maybe we should have done that question first and finished on Tatis. That would have been more fun, wouldn't it?
No, every time you can be compared to a much worse version of the Marlins, you've got to be happy with that, haven't you?
The Rockies have had a slightly better record than the Marlins since they came into existence.
Well, that all counts, doesn't it? That counts for everything. As long as you've had a slightly better record, that's the main thing. We're going to end it there on Ben's sadness and us laughing at the Marlins.
Stick that on the banner.
Thank you for joining us. You can find us on batflipsandnerds.com, where there's some excellent writing going up, and Gav is working overtime at the moment to be pumping out these articles from our contributors, which is excellent to see. So do go and check that out. You can find us on Twitter at batflips_nerds. You can find us on Instagram, where we post one post every year, so make sure you follow us immediately and go and check that out. Thanks for joining us, and goodbye. Go.
Tatis is getting a lot of money for doing a lot over a long time. This is tough. and he's gonna be a very rich man, and he's gonna buy something ridiculous, and we're all gonna love the bit ridiculous thing he buys. That he's gonna own airplanes. There we go. That's my prediction. Airplanes,
Kevin Mather, but, go.
He's had a rough day. You know, when all the people forgot to unmute themselves, sometimes you forget to mute yourself. And I think that might have been what happened here.
MVP odds, NL, AL, Cy Young, ANL, AL. Go.
That's an awful lot at once. So hit me one at a time. Hit me one at a time.
AL, MVP, go.
Chaz Rowe.
Good. That sounds like a made-up player. NL, MVP, go.
I'm going for that bloke with a funny arm who throws really weird for the Mariners.
For the Mariners?
It may have been 2 or 3 years ago.
Good.
Okay. Well, I mean, we have one on the Giants, but the Mariners.
Right, AL Cy Young, go.
AL Cy Young is going to be Rodriguez.
NL Cy Young, go.
This is terrible, terrible podcasting. I am going to say he who shall not be named.
Oh, interesting. Ooh,
yes, controversial.
Brett Gardner is back for the Yankees. What do you think?
I am all in for the Brett Gardner content. I think he's going to ram something different against the top of the dugout.
I wonder where you're going.
And it's
going
to be slightly rude.
Well, best wearing his pinstripes.
Yeah, well, he's going to have a beard and everyone's going to be offended.
Should the Rockies rebuild and should Ben switch teams?
The Rockies should move to Canada so the Rays can stay put, and Ben should follow them.
What, he should go to Canada?
He should go to Canada and start sort of faux doing the accent like... what's his face who went to Holland?
Oh, the ex-football
man. Yes.
Your man.
We're all about sports here.
So
Steve McLaren.
Steve yes. McLaren.
He's gonna McLaren it up, but with a Canadian accent.
Excellent.
Thanks. Sorry.
Thanks for joining us, Rob, when the podcast is finished.
Goodbye.
Bye.